What do you need, son?
Need to borrow your bow.
Let's drop some lead on those motherfuckers!
Light them up.
They ain't gonna sink this battleship, no way.
Verify our range to target. One ping only.
What's the range now?
200 miles, sir.
They break 150 miles, launch the alert 5 aircraft.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing? You're slowing down!
I'm bringing them in closer, Merlin.
You're gonna do what?
I got a good lock. Firing.
Yes, it is our Tenant Commands, learning your Tenant Commands for NAS Pensacola, NAS Whiting Field, and Corey Station. And joining us this morning, we have a really cool opportunity. We're going to talk to the Commodore Training Air Wing 5, which is at NAS Whiting Field. Marine Colonel Anthony Crockle, call sign Fez. Colonel, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate you having me on the show.
Absolutely. These are questions that just people have who don't know, and those are the folks we're trying to explain things to. What is a Commodore?
So the Commodore is a honorary title. It's a Navy title for commanding officers at a major command level, 06 level, that are in command of operational units.
So, and this is one of the things that sometimes civilians have trouble with is things like, okay, so he's a colonel, but he's a Commodore, and he's a commanding officer. Which one? Well, all.
Right.
All of them.
In my case, all three.
That's exactly right. This is kind of unusual, though, and we probably ought to talk about this at the beginning, is this is one of the most important commands in the aviation training pipeline because you oversee both the primary instruction for fixed-wing aircraft but also the advanced instruction for rotary-wing aircraft, helicopters, and what you might call ordinary planes. But you're not a member of the Navy, and so why is that? That's kind of unusual.
Sure. So we train all Navy, Marine Corps, Coast Guard helicopter pilots, as well as 12 partner countries trust us with training their students to become naval aviators in their respective countries. So it's a fantastic organization. I mean, we have three primary squadrons, that's VT-2, VT-3, and VT-6, teaching T-6 training for primary or basic flight training. And then at Southfield, we have three more squadrons teaching helicopter training. That's HT 8, 18, and 28.
So you have, and for me anyway, it's really helpful to think about it as almost two separate air operations, two separate airports, even though they're on the same campus. The north or the northwest or whatever is where you're in the Texan, the T-6 Texan. That's the turbo prop that people see flying overhead, the orange and the white coloring, and then the other one is either a combination of the Sea Ranger, which is the old helicopter, or the new T-73 Thrasher, which is more orange in color, but that's a brand new one, and that's the South operation. So when people come out of training from Redman, okay, they come out of the sort of knife, the Naval Introductory Flight Evaluation, and then they go to you at the North Field to get primary flight instruction, right?
Right.
And what does that entail? What's that process involve?
Sure, yeah. So the whole process is about 7 months long, and they'll start out in ground school learning T-6 systems, fuel, electrical, hydraulic, that sort of thing. Then they'll go into simulators. Then they'll start flying in what we call the contact phase, and that phase consists of, learning how to handle the aircraft with stalls and spins, and then learning how to do course rules, basically the way we fly in and out of the airport, and also how to do a basic landing pattern, like touch and goes and that sort of thing. After that, they'll split off in either one of two branches based off of operational requirements. They'll either go to a formation stage where they'll learn how to fly very close to another aircraft. Not as close as the Blues, but certainly in what we call parade formation. And then they'll split off and go to learn how to fly instruments. In other words, learn how to fly when you can't see a visible horizon outside, in the clouds, in other words. And then they'll typically culminate with a couple of day and night visual navigation flights based off of terrain features on the ground. And then they'll finish up and select into a different pipeline. So they'll either go jets, or they'll go maritime, V-22s, or helicopters.
So this process, and they go, they do either instruments or formation, and then whichever one they did first, they have to then do the other one. They're both required. It's just a question of what makes more sense in a production sense, you know, which to come first, right?
Right.
So they graduate through that, and then, as you say, they're gonna select for the jets or fixed wing or the Osprey or whatever, and that's basically by how well they did. Typically, jets are the better performers, and so forth. Is that the idea usually?
So typically, our number one student can select whatever they want, but everyone else after that is largely a function of their desire, but also the needs of the Navy, right? There could be a case where there are, you know, zero V-22 spots open that week, and they won't be able to select for it. So it's needs of the Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard, but also the desires of the student and, of course, the performance of the student. There is a minimum requirement to become a jet pilot in terms of their grades.
And what is it, about two-thirds of all of the primary flight instruction is going to come to Whiting, and the other third goes to Corpus Christi after they go through Knife, is that right?
Correct. So there's five squadrons total for primary. Three of them are here, and two of them are Corpus.
Okay, perfect. Very good. And how many students is that at a time?
So I will tell you, I have 1,100 students here that I graduate between fixed-wing training, primary, and advanced helicopter training. That's a staggering 91,000 flight hours. I wouldn't be able to do it without the help of 380 instructor pilots. And, of course, we have 330 aircraft here on station. So that's why you see us flying around all those orange and white helicopters and planes all the time.
Busiest flight operations in the world, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so if you include all of our outlying fields, it is the biggest or the busiest, rather, compound in terms of air operations.
Very good. We're talking to Colonel Anthony Fez Crockle, the Commodore of Training Air Wing 5 at Nanny S. Whiting Field. Okay, so Colonel, they get their way through primary flight instruction, and then they graduate and they select. If they go big wing, they go to Corpus Christi. If they go helos, they stay there for advanced rotary training. And if they go jets, they go to what, Kingsville and Meridian, I believe. But if they stay here and they do helicopters, how does it change? Because the perception I've always had is that in basic flight instruction or primary flight instruction, you kind of want to, if they're not going to work out, you want to make sure they don't work out fast, you know, so that you don't waste time and money and they don't waste time and career on something that's not going to work out. But in helicopters, it's a little bit different. Is that right?
Yeah. So our, you know, we have an attrition rate here of about 9% for primary. Now that includes all things. So it could be performance. It could be aeromedical adaptability. Maybe somebody who just gets really sick in the plane. Or it could be medical reasons, right? So about 9% attrition in primary. So you're right. We do end up, we do want to figure out whether they are going to be ready to fly as a career early on. Now, as you can imagine, that gets cut in about half once you go to advanced because they're already done with primary. So at advanced, it's a little bit, the training is a little bit longer. It's about 8 months. But effectively, it's a similar process in terms of ground school, SIMS, contacts, formations, instruments. You're just living a completely different way to fly since now you're hovering, right?
Right. And very, 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 very intense in terms of academics, in terms of performance. You don't get to fail much, and you've got to know your stuff, and you've got to be able to do it and do it right and impress the instructors. Basically true across the board, right?
Absolutely. We do have a very high standard. I mean, we expect students to come prepared. And, you know, we find as the students who work as a team early and study in groups do better than others.
And when it comes to, now you talked earlier that in the T-6 and the Texan, the propeller plane, that the simulators are a part of that. But with the, especially with the new T-73 Thrashers, the new helicopters from Leonardo, these simulators are unbelievable. I've actually had a chance to fly one of those when we came up there for Leadership Santa Rosa. The simulator work is phenomenal, right?
The fidelity of the simulators is staggering. With state-of-the-art capabilities, some of the best helicopter sims you'll see in all of, even civilian in industry. We have mixed reality here. We have simulators that can model, you know, snow, sleet, rain. We can put a Navy ship in the ocean so that you can practice how to land on the ship in the ocean. The capabilities are absolutely amazing. And unlike the aircraft, right, they're unaffected by real weather and unaffected by, you know, the mechanical issues that we see at times.
So if I'm on the ground, I think this will help people to maybe relate to what you do a lot. If I'm on the ground, like yesterday, we were canoeing in Coldwater Creek. If I look up and I see one of the T-6 Texans flying overhead, who's in that plane?
So what you'll see around here is you'll see a student in the front seat and an instructor in the rear seat from one of the VT squadrons.
But at some point, the student is going to fly by themselves, right?
Correct. So they'll append their call sign solo at the end of their call sign. So the VT2 they're the duo birds. So they go by, and their call sign is Blackbird. VT3 are the Red Knights. So they go by Red Knight. And then VT6 they're the shooters. So they're the shooter. So it might be a call sign would be shooter 1-2-3, and then when they're flying by themselves, it would be shooter 1-2-3 solo.
Okay. All right. And same for the helicopters. Mostly it's an instructor and a student, but then at some point they solo?
Correct. However, they do what's called a buddy solo. So they'll actually go out, because once we're flying helicopters, we know we're going to be flying a crewed aircraft for the rest of their career. So that becomes a focus of the training, from going from a single seat mindset and primary to a crewed aircraft in advance. So when they go solo, they'll actually find a buddy who may have just finished up advanced helicopter training and go on a solo with them.
Very interesting. And so,
no instructor.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. Okay. So it's not quite a solo, but it's a more of a realistic simulation in the sense that they're going to fly that way in the fleet. They're not going to fly it by themselves in a helicopter. Okay. And I know you said it, but I just want to make sure people hear this part because it's so important. Every single person who is going to fly a helicopter in the Coast Guard, the Marines, and the Navy is going to come through Whiting in the advanced rotary training on the South Field. And 2/3 of all of the pilots of any kind are going to come through the north side of the field. And then some of them will go to rotor, some of them will go to jet, some of them will go to the big wing. One or two other quick questions. I knew we'd run out of time before I ran out of questions. Sometimes you take longer flights. A lot of the flights are between Whiting Field and these outlying fields around the area, which is how you practice. But then toward the end, you take a cross-country flight in both platforms, right?
Absolutely. You know, Pensacola is called the cradle of naval aviation. Mm-hmm. And this is where we learn how to fly. Now, it is a very scripted situation and scenario flying in and out of these local airports, right? You really get to learn when you get on the road and you get away from the cradle, right? So sort of get pushed out of the nest and go on the road and fly into really, you know, busy airspaces, you know, Washington, D.C. In fact, I'm going to be flying to Washington, D.C., starting to fly there to Washington, D.C. in about an hour. And we do a lot of flying on our weekends, both helicopters and on the fixed-wing side as well.
Very cool. I absolutely knew we would run out of time before we were able to get to, I mean, I got to about a third of my questions. But just this one thing I want to, what's an on-wing? If you can do it in a minute, what's an on-wing?
Sure. Your on-wing is the instructor pilot you are assigned to as soon as you start the flight training portion. And that on-wing is going to shepherd you and mentor you through your first, maybe 10 or so flights. And then after that, you're going to go and start learning from other instructors to get a sort of a different perspective on techniques.
So you start with one sort of, I hate to use this expression, but like your kindergarten instructor, and then they get you the place where you can start learning from a variety of grade school instructors, and then you get all of the things from there. Man, Colonel Crockle, great to talk to you. Thank you so much for the time this morning. We barely scratched the surface on what I know we could do for hours and talk about the training, since it's a many, many weeks and many thousands of students process. But thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thanks for helping our folks understand what happens at NES Whiting Field and what they're seeing in the air when they see those planes and helicopters flying overhead.
Thanks for having me on the show, Andrew.